Modern Love, the podcast, is supported by...
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
Produced by the iLab at WBUR, Boston.
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is Modern Love. Stories of love, loss, and redemption. I'm your host, Meghna Chakrabarty. What if you had to pretend your partner was a stranger for a day? If today were day one of your relationship, how would you act? How would they respond? Would you fall in love again? Tim Kreider and his girlfriend tried to find out. He writes about their experiment in his essay, Just for Tonight, Pretend You Don't Know Me. His essay is read by actor and comedian Nick Kroll. He stars in the film Olympic Dreams in select theaters now.
Like many couples, my girlfriend and I agree that Valentine's Day is a commercial holiday. Last year, neither of us wanted to do anything traditionally romantic, like go out for a fancy dinner. We wanted instead to do something scandalous. We had a wish list of activities we'd been gradually checking off and talked over a few possibilities. We settled on one of my suggestions. We would go to a bar that neither of us frequented, pretend to be strangers, and I would try to pick her up. We had been dating for 8 months, long enough to get comfortable with each other. Getting comfortable is one of the pleasures of being in a long-term relationship. Not having to put up a first date front, getting takeout and watching TV, being boring together. It's a relief to not have to be on, to feel free to be in an unattractive mood or display one of your weird neuroses without worrying the other person will finally realize the truth about you. But this is also a hazard of relationships. You can take your partner for granted and quit trying to impress. Couples forget how to flirt or that they're attracted to anyone else and get bored with each other and themselves. Until the day it emerges that one of them has a whole secret life, an affair or an erotic correspondence, a hidden kink, an ex of some unexpected type or gender. Neither of us was practiced at role-playing. We're not into elaborate schoolgirl, professor, applicant, employer, or princess hut scenarios. We weren't going to pretend to be other people. We were going to be ourselves in a parallel reality in which we hadn't met. We both worried we might just feel stupid and want to quit. There was some last-minute waffling. She was having a bad day, and I told her we could postpone if she wasn't in the mood, but she decided to rally. We established some code words, one as a warning and another to call the whole thing off. Walking to the bar that night to meet my own girlfriend, I was nervous. I had freaked out over what to wear. Choosing a bar stool felt as fraught with possibilities and drawbacks as an opening chess move. In the end, I settled on a stool two away from a guy at the end of the bar, leaving my girlfriend the choice to sit beside either him or me. I took out the book I had brought, Nabokov's Pale Fire, whose narrator is also pretending to be someone else, and waited. When she arrived, she wounded me by taking the stool next to the other guy. "I couldn't take the one next to you," she later said. "That would have been too easy." She said she had even considered sitting on the other side of the bar from me, making eyes at me from there. I have no idea how to pick someone up on the other side of a bar and would certainly have failed and disgraced myself. It's relevant to mention here that my girlfriend is voluptuous. She tired long ago of men staring at her cleavage and now dresses in severe black clothing with high necklines and austere copper accessories that look like machine parts or totemic objects. So when she slid onto her stool in a tight sleeveless shirt that clung to her breasts and bared her midriff, it had roughly the same warm, disorienting effect on me of a half a Dilaudid chewed. Her skirt with an angled hemline that showed off her thighs only added to the feeling. She took a book out of her purse and opened it, also Pale Fire. We were reading it together as a winter project. The other guy was also reading a book. "It's the end of the bar book club," I said as an opening gambit. "Hey," other guy said, "did you know you two are reading the same book?" We both feigned surprise, and the three of us got into a conversation. Other guy's book was a collection of essays that sounded pretty good. Alarmingly, he turned out to be smart and well-read because, of course, New York is full of smart, well-read people vying with their formidable educations and charm for mates. He was a lawyer, and not even a boring lawyer, but one who did something interesting and cool. It seemed to me that my girlfriend was talking with him more than me. It began to seem as if other guy might be doing better with her than I was, and that it was by no means a foregone conclusion that I would win her. I had begun to both like and feel sorry for this guy, since he had no idea he was a supporting player in our private game and I hoped had no actual chance with her, but also hate him and want to best him in combat. My girlfriend and I had once seen two male Canada geese fighting over a female goose, squawking furiously and beating the water with their wings and grappling at each other, snaking throats with their bills. Because, no offense, all geese look pretty much alike, it was hard to say which goose won, the attacker or the defender, but I knew that I wanted to be the goose that ended up with the girl, not the one who flew off honking in ignominious defeat. Thank God, the guy's wife eventually showed up with a colleague of hers. They were both writers for a TV show they assured us we had never seen, who got together every Tuesday night to watch the new episode. They were all interesting people. We liked them, but also we couldn't break character. We had felt self-conscious and uncertain about this plan to start out with, but now that our private game had become an uncontrolled experiment involving other people, we were committed. It had gotten real. Having to maintain our pose of being strangers in front of a third party also forced us to reintroduce ourselves, to ask each other, "So, what do you do?" and, "Oh, what neighborhood do you live in?" And we had to try and answer without being boring and to listen to each other's answers anew. My girlfriend said later that she was sure that we would have dropped the act 15 minutes in if not for the presence of these strangers. It also kept our role play tethered to reality. She was forced to be more realistically flirtatious, treating me like a stranger at a bar with some wariness and respectability, instead of just inviting me back to her place after one drink or having sex with me in the bathroom. Just before our three new friends left, the lawyer gave us each his card and said, "I'm here every Tuesday if you want to keep our book club going." I thought he gave me a collegial guy look of good luck or congratulations. After they left, I asked my girlfriend if she would let me pay for our drinks. I was as anxious asking and as thrilled when she accepted as I would have been had I been meeting her for the first time. Let us draw the curtain of discretion over the evening's conclusion, except to say that it is a singular experience to have awkward, drunken hookup sex with your own girlfriend. This wasn't about spicing up a relationship gone stale. I'm not necessarily recommending this particular game to others. What I would recommend is what it did for us. It reminded us that, despite the illusion of familiarity our months together may have fostered, my girlfriend and I are still strange to each other. Telling each other stories about our romantic and sexual past has something of the same effect, reminding me that she is a whole person of whom I only know a recent and narrow sample, with a long history of relationships, flings, and fantasies, a whole spectrum of desire, much of which may be invisible to me. This is frightening, but also exciting. It's easy to get complacent and imagine that the narrow band your partner allows you to see or the only one you're comfortable looking at is all there is. In the end, our game was not just an aphrodisiac, but also a tonic, a reminder that she could, if she wanted, go home with someone else any night she wants. Although I trust her and believe that she loves me, I still have to win her once in a while. Maybe it'll become a tradition for us, a ritual reminder of a perennial truth, assuming we get to do it again. but no one is guaranteed another Valentine's Day.
That's Nick Kroll reading Tim Kreider's essay, Just for Tonight, Pretend You Don't Know Me. We'll catch up with Tim after the break.
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
I'm Emily Badger. I'm a reporter with the New York Times. Since the pandemic, empty office buildings have become much more common in many cities. Why can't we just turn them into housing? It's actually a really complicated question. To answer this question, you have to find a developer trying to turn an office building into apartments, ride a rickety elevator to the 30th floor of a construction site to see the interior guts of a building. Finds an expert in incandescent light bulbs who can explain to you how they fundamentally change office buildings. And that's just the beginning of what you have to do. When you subscribe to the New York Times, you are sending reporters like me out into the world to ask questions of dozens of different experts, to go and visit places most people don't get to go, to try to come back with answers, and then turn all of that into something that anyone can understand. If you'd like to become a subscriber, head to nytimes.com/subscribe. You need to see the animated floor plans in this piece.
Tim Kreider's essay was published in 2018. He didn't want to update us on the relationship he writes about because Tim wanted to protect their privacy. But when we caught up with him, Tim urged other couples to get out of their comfort zones.
What that essay ultimately was about was finding a way to make your partner strange and new to you again, because it is a problem inherent in all relationships that familiarity breeds, I won't say contempt or even indifference, but, you know, familiarity isn't exciting. And this is the paradox in relationships, right? We want someone thrillingly new and different, but we also want someone with whom we can be a blobhead and sit home and be boring and watch TV and eat potato chips right out of the bag. Also, you can't get lazy. I mean, it's nice that people accept you for the horrible person you really are, but you do have to keep trying. You can't assume there's nothing you could ever do to alienate them. And of course, you know, people are much nastier to their partners than they would be to most other people in the world, because unfortunately, you earn the intimacy of behaving badly with each other. I wouldn't specifically recommend doing this thing unless it sounds fun to both of you, but I would recommend finding ways of accomplishing the same end of reminding yourself not to take each other for granted. It's nice when you learn something about someone that surprises you. And it's not that hard to find those things, really. You just stop asking each other probing questions after your first few dates. You forget that you don't know 97% of what there is to know about this person.
And we asked Tim, did he and his girlfriend ever try this experiment again?
I think to make that particular activity a tradition would maybe defeat the purpose. It's something that's inherently spontaneous, unpredictable. The whole idea is to keep yourself off balance. No, we never made that a tradition. I don't remember what we did last Valentine's Day.
That's Tim Kreider. He's a writer and author of two collections of essays, We Learn Nothing and I Wrote This Book Because I Love You. More from Nick Kroll and Daniel Jones after the break.
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
I'm Emily Badger. I'm a reporter with the New York Times. Since the pandemic, empty office buildings have become much more common in many cities. Why can't we just turn them into housing? It's actually a really complicated question. To answer this question, you have to find a developer trying to turn an office building into apartments, ride a rickety elevator to the 30th floor of a construction site to see the interior guts of a building. finds an expert in incandescent light bulbs who can explain to you how they fundamentally change office buildings. And that's just the beginning of what you have to do. When you subscribe to the New York Times, you are sending reporters like me out into the world to ask questions of dozens of different experts, to go and visit places most people don't get to go, to try to come back with answers, and then turn all of that into something that anyone can understand. If you'd like to become a subscriber, head to nytimes.com/subscribe. You need to see the animated floor plans in this piece.
Here's Daniel Jones, editor of the Modern Love column for the New York Times.
It's kind of a profound question, can you fake unfamiliarity? That's one question that Tim's essay asks. And the answer is complicated. They do sort of fake unfamiliarity, but I think the more interesting point that Tim makes is that familiarity itself is the illusion, that thinking that you know someone and know everything about them just because you spend a lot of time together, that is the illusion. I'd never really quite, you know, heard that idea expressed in that way before, and it stuck with me, you know? Like, don't be so presumptuous that you think you know this person and that they don't have mysteries and that they don't have things they keep from you and that they might one day really surprise you with aspects of their personality.
And here's actor and comedian Nick Kroll.
I think we all know what it's like to both be attracted to and scared of the comfort that you feel inside of a relationship. And I'm interested in what couples do to figure out how to navigate that comfort. I think a lot of people can relate to this kind of story of being in a relationship with someone they love and feel comfortable with, and also trying to figure out how to keep that relationship interesting and exciting.
Thanks again to Nick for reading this week's piece. His new film, Olympic Dreams, is in select theaters and on digital platforms now. Modern Love is a production of The New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. It's produced, directed, and edited by Caitlin O'Keefe. Original scoring and sound design by Matt Reed. Iris Adler is our executive producer. Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for The New York Times and advisor to the show. The idea for the Modern Love podcast was conceived by Lisa Tobin. Special thanks to Julia Simon, Anya Stremian, and Mia Lee at The New York Times. Additional music, courtesy of APM. If you like the show, leave us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps new listeners find us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. See you next week.